So good morning and welcome back to those of you who were able to come yesterday. We welcome you again, and to those of you who are new, we hope that you'll enjoy Venerable Renee's teachings and the meditations today. A reminder that tomorrow will be the opportunity, if you like, to present offerings to Venerable Renee. That's traditionally done with a kata, which is a white offering scarf. And since that's part of the offering, those are available for sale in the bookstore if you'd like. And lots of people here know how to do it, and they'll show you when you line up how to do it. So if you've never done that before, lots of people can help you with that tomorrow. If you can't be here tomorrow and would like to do that, you can do that at any time as well. You can do that in the lobby when he comes in and out, or you can go up to him during the dedications. So that opportunity is not limited to tomorrow. Also, a little pitch for generosity, that the center has a policy of offering the teachings at absolutely no charge so that it makes them accessible for everyone to come. And so that includes this retreat this weekend. And if you feel that you're getting some benefit from it and you would like to support the center to be able to continue to present these kinds of wonderful teachings, then we have donation boxes in the lobby. You can make a donation online, or you can also make a donation on your credit card through the bookstore. So we can help you with that at any time if you like. Are there any questions about the retreat today? Yes, Andre. Yeah, I think so. We struggle daily with our AC system. It blows hard, and then it gets stuffy, and it blows hard, and it gets stuffy. So we ask for your patience. That's just part of the fun of group settings. Yes.
So yesterday I mentioned, you know, there's three main, to have a healthy spiritual development, there's three parts or three aspects that you have to work on. One is to get the blessing, you know, from enlightened beings, and also to purify the mind and accumulate positive potential, you know, good luck. So this usually is done by doing prayers like the seven limb prayers. So of course at the beginning we do it quite fake, you know, we learn it, and gradually we do it more and more with feeling from the heart, you know? So that is somehow, how to say, if you want to make a nice garden, you know, to plant flowers, first you have to make the ground, you know, ready. So doing the seven limb prayers can to create a certain vibration in our mind, and when you do the actual meditation, it's actually much more effective. So that's the purpose of doing, you know, prayers and reciting mantras and so forth. So first of all, I want to check, can everybody hear me easily? Yeah, because my voice is quite soft, so. Okay, so so the object to whom we make requests, so are all the enlightened beings, you know. So there are billions of enlightened beings, okay? So many beings were much smarter than us, you know, they reached enlightenment countless ages ago. We're still here, you know, trying to get our way up. You know. They made it, you know, a long time ago. Right? So these enlightened beings live in three dimensions simultaneously. Yeah? The most subtle level is the omniscient mind. So their mind, their subtle mind of clear light pervades all that exists. Okay, so one could communicate to the Buddhas in that form as just being space, space of goodness, you know, you could communicate to the, you know, to Buddhas like that. So there are beings which don't, when they don't pray to any specific form, they just pray to space, that space of goodness, or like, let's say, Christian, you pray to God, right? So it's the same thing, you know, it's just philosophically is a different understanding, but practically it's actually the same thing, you know, you just pray to God, or to space, or to, in, as a Buddhist, you pray to the Dharmakaya, or the omniscient mind. Right? But I think it's the same movement of the heart, and it's oriented towards the same thing. And then, so the Buddhas, this omniscient mind can crystallize form. Right? So they can crystallize energy in a subtle dimension. So they have light energy body, or rainbow bodies. Right? So they crystallize bodies, and they crystallize pure lands. So they can crystallize a world in which advanced yogis and yogini can take rebirths and finish their spiritual path there. Right? So this in Buddhism is called the Pure Lands. Okay? So each Buddha, you know, the Chenrezi has a Pure Land, you know, Shakyamuni Buddha has a Pure Land, Maitreya has a Pure Land. So almost any Buddha has a Pure Land, right? And there you can take rebirths and finish your spiritual path, right? So when you pray to Chenrezi, Tara, you know, Shakyamuni Buddha in that form, basically what you're praying to is to the Buddhas in the form of the Sambhogakaya form, or enjoyment body, translated in English. Right? So these beings, they create an enlightenment body which is 16 years old and lasts forever. You know, there's no birth, there's no death, it's spontaneously manifested and it lasts forever. And they can create, actually they have one, but they can create millions of emanation of that thing. Right? And they know what each one does. You know? So that's the Buddha's enjoyment body. So when we make prayers, you know, like to Tara or to Shakyamuni Buddha. So it's, you crystallize that form in space in front of you, and that's the enjoyment body, right? And then you make prayer. You see, for some people, just relating to space is difficult. You know, who am I praying to? You know. So for them to focus on a Buddha or Tara or a form, you know, it makes the relationship easier. You know, it's kind of, you know, some kind of, you know, interaction happening, right? And for other people, it's actually difficult to imagine that, you know, they cannot communicate to space, they cannot communicate to this light energy form, so for them they need something more tangible. And then they would focus like on somebody in their life that is what they imagine being an enlightened beings. You know, what's the closest for them for an enlightened being, like His Holiness Dalai Lama, for example. You know, so they would focus on the a Nimanakaya form of enlightenment, you know, the emanation body, or the, how? You remember? Nimanakaya in English?
Nimanakaya?
Yeah, in English? Somebody Nirmanakaya in English? So I think emanation body, yeah. So, so would focus, you see, then you can do the same prayer focusing on whoever fulfills that role model or fulfills that idea of the archetype of enlightenment, okay? And often, for example, in advanced practice, you make a combination of the three. So, for example, in the Lama Trapa, you see, you have the outer form is your main teacher, you know, and then in his heart is Shakyamuni Buddha, which is the enjoyment body, and in his heart is a syllable, you know, and that syllable symbolizes the omniscient mind. So, because one has to understand that these three levels of reality exist simultaneously, and actually it's the transformation, is the purification of our gross body. You see, in Tantra, actually you purify this gross body and transform it into the emanation body. Then you purify your subtle body, you transform it into the enjoyment body. And you purify the very subtle body and mind, and that becomes then the Dharmakaya, the omniscient mind. So we as ordinary beings have these three things there. By purifying them, they transform into this enlightened bodies, right? So for the first time we're going just to recite it through, and we are going to do it once this morning, then we do it once more this afternoon, and usually we start, you know, the morning and afternoon by reciting these things, and I will explain them a little bit you know, deeper as we go about it, but first, the first time we're just going to recite it so that you get acquainted with the text. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. By my training in the six perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. By my training in the six perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. By my training in the six perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. May all beings abide in equanimity, free of attachment and aversion. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings find good rebirth and the bliss of liberation. Then one focus in space in front of oneself, and one imagine countless Buddhas, you know, like Shakyamuni, Maitreya, Manjushri, and so many. All these beings that were smart enough to reach enlightenment before us. So to all these beings, we open our heart and offer these prayers. To you, O lions amongst humans, who come in the past, present and future, in the worlds of the 10 directions, I bow down with my body, speech and mind. By my wish for the Bodhisattva's life, many Buddhas appear to my mind, and I bow down to every one of you, with bodies equal to the atoms. On every atom are countless Buddhas, each amidst countless Bodhisattvas. I imagine all phenomena like this completely filled with Buddhas, in separation to all gone to bliss, with inexhaustible seas of praise, and with sounds of melodious verse, I sing the Buddha's qualities, beautiful flower, fragrant wind, sweet music, scented oils and parasol, radiant light and heavenly incense, I offer to the victorious ones, fine glossing and fragrant, sandalwood, proud of piled high as mountain, especially array of offerings, I offer to you victorious ones. With deep admiration for all Buddhas and faith in the Bodhisattva's life, with transcendent offerings perilous and vast, I bow down to offer to the victors every harmful actions I have done with my three doors of body, speech and mind, besieged by greed, anger and confusion, all of being before you. In my heart, I rejoice in virtues of all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, solitary realizers, hearers, and in the virtues of all beings. You, light of the world's intended action, who have gained the Buddha's omniscience, all you who are my spiritual guides, please turn the Supreme Dalai Lama. With hands in prayer, I earnestly request, you who may actualize Nirvana, please stay with us for eons countless, as the number of atoms of the world, the happiness and benefit of those wandering in samsara. Whatever slight virtues I may have great, by praying homage, offerings and acknowledging my faults, and by rejoicing and praying that Buddhas will always stay and teach us, I dedicate all to him. This ground adorned with perfume and flower, Mount Meru, four worlds, sun and moon, imagine and offered as a pure land. May all beings enjoy this pure land. I send forth Jhumun Mandala to you, my precious Guru. Glorious and precious Guru Shakyamuni, please abide on the lotus and moon seat at my crown. Take care of me with all your kindness, and bestow upon me the attainments of your holy body, speech and mind. So you see here, if you have visualized countless Buddhas, you imagine that they all absorb into Shakyamuni Buddha, and he comes either, for some people it's easier to visualize in front, and then as you recite the mantra, a rays of light comes from the heart of the Buddha, and enters into you and fills you with light, energy, purifies whatever sickness, you know, disturbed emotion, and make your mind very clear and very sharp. Or you can imagine, you know, the Buddha Shakyamuni comes on the crown of your head and turns and is actually sitting like above the crown of your head. And then from his heart chakra, as you recite the mantra, the energy comes down to his central channel and enters the crown of your head and comes to awaken your heart chakra. So whichever visualization is easier for you.
Aya ta om mune mun ma munaye so taya na om mune mune ma munaye so taya Om Mune Mune Ma Munaye Soha Om Mune Mune Amunaye Soha. 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 Mune Mune Amunaye Soha. Mune Mune Amunaye Soha. Mune Mune Amunaye Soha. Mune Mune Amunaye Om Mune Mune Amunaye Soha.
Then you imagine that the Buddha is, you know, has a great wish to merge with your own mind, to awaken your mind. You know, he has infinite love and compassion for you, and he just wishes you to become like him. So, and then you imagine that he melts into light and becomes thumb size and enters the crown of your head and very, very gently goes down the central channel, awakening the crown chakra, radiating light energy there. And then coming to the throat chakra, energizing that chakra. And then gently going down and coming to rest in your heart chakra. And from there, that sphere of light, Buddha's mind, becomes bigger and bigger, filling your body with blissful light, peaceful, gentle, loving energy. And it pervades your whole body and mind. And then you imagine that that energy radiates further out and that the shape of your body disappears, that you're just consciousness, mind. So your mind is like space. It is clear, yet it is aware, it cognizes, it knows. And you try to rest silently in that space as much as possible. And if thoughts arise, you try not to follow them. You focus on the space, the volume, and not on the content. And if you don't pay attention to thoughts, they will disappear on their own accord. So you hold the space of your awareness, neither too tight nor too loose. So that would be cultivating calm abiding, using the nature of the mind. Now if you want to use some insight, introspection in the Mahamudra way, while being in that space, you try to see where the thought comes from. When a thought arises, where does it arise from?
And then when a thought disappears, where does it go? And while a thought is there, what is it made of? And when there is no thought, that mind, is it inside the body or outside? Or both? Or neither? And I, me, who am I? Am I the body? Am I the mind? Am I the thought, I? Then we continue the prayers. So, contemplation of the graduate path. Whatever you want for yourself and others, with a human form is easily attained. Disengage yourself from meaningless efforts. Strive to accomplish the highest goals. Because all things composite are impermanent, life changes and never abides. That change is the basis of suffering, for the samsaric mind fills with frustration on watching its creations constantly fade. The higher you climb in samsara, the higher the cliff on which you push. The more things you own, the tighter you are bound. The dearer you hear someone, the greater the chance he will hurt you. The faster you subdue enemy, the faster the number increase. This body is a thing borrowed for a moment, and possessions are things stored for others. Now we dally with them, but quickly are they lost and misused, and only are sources of misery. Therefore, no worldly possession is worth the effort of gaining. Turn your back on that with only handicaps. An unburdened mind is joy supreme. The pinnacle of aims is to follow this path. Body, speech, and mind kept stainless in pure self-discipline. Mind held in samadhi, blissful and clear. And wisdom seeing all realities of every situation. The mother beings wandering in the sixth realm, to me their child are pieces of my heart. For many times they soothed my trouble, and in infinite ways they brought me joy. These infinite beings so kind are covered by the fog of ignorance, constantly lashed by whips of delusion. They have no chance to lay down the burden of misery from their minds. Therefore, wherever you meet anyone, greet them with high smiling with love. Why mention that you should not even consider holding evil intention or deceptive thoughts? The way things seems to be, other than projected labels, is a distortion created by a deluded mind. If you look at the root of things, emptiness is clearly understood. And in the vast space of perception of emptiness, mental grasping for ultimate subsides. Then one looks into the face of the world, everything seen without essence. Understanding interdependence, we understand emptiness. Understanding emptiness, we understand interdependence. This is the view which is in the middle, and which is beyond the terrifying cliff of eternalis, nihilis, neither and both. O ma merit of this virtue may become Buddha and lead all beings everyone into that enlightened state. May the precious body, mind, not yet born, arise and grow. And may that born not decline, but increase more and more.
Okay, 5 minutes break. So, you see, if one does prayers like that, like that, with, you know, some kind of heartfelt feeling, then somehow the mind goes in a certain vibration or a certain mood. And then within that mood, actually, developing calm abiding is easier. You know, you can, there's a gentle stillness there that allows it, you know, to, you know, from the experience of previous yogis and yogins, it helps the mind, you know, to get tamed. So, and that's valid also for analytical meditation and calm abiding meditation. That's why one does practice like that. So people which do retreat, usually they start their meditation by doing a prayer like that. They absorb, you know, the blessing or the enlightened beings into their heart, and they rest still there for a while. You know, they try to feel how their mind is one with the enlightened mind. You see, all these is our tricks. Because in actually, our mind is already there. You see, our enlightened mind is there, but we don't recognize. It's too subtle. So, by this trick of imagining in front, bringing inside, you know, somehow it makes us look there where one should look, you know. And then slowly you start tasting something, you know, something very subtle there in your mind. It's just, it's so subtle that we don't, usually our mind, our way of looking is too gross, so we cannot fine-tune our attention to something so subtle, you know. So this trick, gently by repeating again and again, you become gradually aware of something very subtle that pervades your mind. You know? So that's the, you know, the psychology behind it. So now, if one would do a calm abiding retreat, one would do that, start with that, and then, you know, you absorb, and then you stay in that state of awareness, right? And then, if you would use the breath as an object, then after a while, you would, you know, turn your attention to the movement of the breath and start your session of calm abiding on the movement of the breath, right? So, you would perhaps do that, you know, the first session in the morning and the first session in the afternoon. If you do also a session before breakfast, you would start with that there, then after breakfast one, then after lunch one, and then after dinner one, you know, if you do four sessions. So you would do this short prayer, four times, you know, and then as we are going to do now, we imagine that we have done the prayers now, and then now we will do one session of calm abiding, one after the other. Right? So you don't necessarily repeat the prayers each time. Mm-hmm. So when one trains in calm abiding, what is important at the beginning, you look for quality and not duration. What you want is good attention, short time. You see? Then to do long session with the mind wandering all over the place. So you say, you know, you can say, oh, I meditated 2 hours. Well, during that time I did shopping, I did the laundry, you know, I raised my kids, you know, I prepared my holiday, you know. Can all these things happen while you were sitting there, right? So that's not meditating on calm abiding, right? So it's better to do 3 minutes without any wandering thought than to do a half hour with going all over the place, right? In terms of calm abiding, you look for quality, and then once the quality is there, gradually you extend the duration without losing the quality. Okay? So, you see, actually, to get to this sustained attention is actually quite difficult. And so, at the beginning, it needs a lot of effort in a way that one is not used to train the mind. You know, one is not used to have this kind of sustained attention, right? So, it needs a lot of, you know, effort, you know. Okay, so we're going to do a bunch of, normally we could do 3 minutes, but I think because some older students here, we do 5 minute session. You know? So in the text it says, you know, often Yeah, basically it says, you know, you do whatever duration you want, but you do many, many sessions, you know. So if one would do that as a training to get, you know, one would do a calm abiding retreat, you would do maybe 10 or 20 sessions of 5 minutes a day. And then once you're able to keep the continuity without losing it for 5 minutes, then you would extend to 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 8 minutes, you know, without losing it, right? Or if 5 minutes is too long, you could start with 3 minutes, right? Or 2 minutes, or even 1 minute. You know, there's no rule. It completely depends on the individual. But since we are in a group, you have to find some kind of, you know, middle way, right? So, as we did yesterday, you know, first sit comfortably and scan your body, you know, so that that your body position is comfortable and that there's no tension in your body, you know, that you knees are relaxed, your hip are relaxed, that your spine is more or less, you know, comfortably like a pile of coins, one on top of each other, and there's no muscle tension or sinews, you know, and joint. Everything is completely relaxed. Your shoulder are relaxed. And then even the muscle of your face behind the eyes and so forth, you relax all the muscles. Then you imagine you're grounded. So if you sit on a chair, you imagine that the sole of your feet have roots that go to the center of the earth. And if you sit cross-legged, you imagine that your spine goes down into the center of the earth. So you feel grounded. And then you imagine that there's a column of light going up into space from the crown of your head. Then you check up your sitting position. So if you sit on a chair, it's better that your back is straight without leaning too much on the back of your seat. And if you sit cross-legged, you check that your position, you know, is kind of comfortable, that you can sustain that position for a while. And then the hands can be put either on the legs, you know, flat, like in the position that's called sitting like a mountain. It makes you feel like a rock, you know, stable. Or you can put the mind, the hand in a meditation posture, like the right hand resting on the left palm and the two thumbs touching. And in both cases, you try to see that there's some air floating through below your armpit, or you know that your arms are a little bit apart from your body. And then the tongue is against the upper palate, just behind the front teeth. You check that your shoulders are relaxed. And then, usually it says it's good, if one can, to let the eyes slightly open, to let, you know, not enough so that you get distracted by what you see, but just enough to leave some light coming in. And then once you have found a good position, usually while you do calm abiding meditation, it's better not to move at all. So the less you move your body, the less it will move your mind. So it's better to be completely still. That's why it's good to check your body, to relax, and to find a good, comfortable position. And then you rest in that, you completely still your body. And then you check your breath, you focus on your breath, and you can decide, I focus on the whole movement of the breath, or the breath at the nostril, or the breath, the rising and falling of the abdomen, whichever you feel comfortable with. Or you can change, you know, sometimes you focus on the nostrils, sometimes the whole breath, sometimes the abdomen, doesn't matter so much. As long as you have the sustained attention of not leaving the breath. And you tell to yourself, now for 5 minutes, I'm going to focus on the movement of the breath. And I will try not to let my mind, at least one part of it, wander away, that I have a sustained attention on the movement of the breath, a continuity of awareness of the breath. And if my mind wanders off, as soon as I become aware of it, I simply bring it back and I establish again a sustained attention. And I will hold my breath neither too tightly, neither with too much effort, and neither too loose, neither being too relaxed. So I find this right middle way of holding my attention on the breath. And I will do that, establishing this continuity for 5 minutes.
Okay, relax and move your body a bit around. See, for some people, suddenly 5 minutes appears to be really a long time. No? So it's a new way of looking at the mind. So you see, it's like, I don't know how to say. So the example, one example given, it's like when you hold a cup. You see, you don't hold the cup too tight because it shakes, and you don't hold it too loose because it dips, right? So to hold the cup, you have to just the right pressure on it, right? So it's same thing. It's almost you have a mental muscle, and you put your attention onto the object, and you hold it not too tight, not too loose. So, but to find this middle way, sometimes you have to hold it tighter, and you say, oh, and to realize what it means too tight. So, and then you loosen up, and then you realize, oh, that's actually too loose. And like that, you slowly find the right level of pressure you hold, with which to hold the object. So only to experience that you can find that out. No? So it's by going from one extreme to other, you suddenly find the middle way. Okay, another 5 minutes. So please take a comfortable position. So you see that there's no tension in the body, no pain. You put your mind there, you release the tension. See if you have pain somewhere, for example in the hip or knee. Sometimes by putting your attention there and imagining some peace, some light there, it kind of releases the tension, and even you can reduce the pain or actually eliminate it. And then once your body is comfortable, you make the determination, now for 5 minutes, I will not let go my attention on the movement of the breath. I will actually glue my mind to it with some sticky tape, and I will not let it go.
So again, relax your attention. Move your body a bit. So you see, the trick is that at the beginning, what you try to do is to, even if you have just 10% of your attention on the breath and 90% of your mind is preoccupied by thought, that's okay. What you want to do is that 10% of your mind always stays on the breath. You see, that you have a sustained attention during the whole 5 minutes with one part of your mind that doesn't lose the breath. And if you're able to do that, you will see then gradually, suddenly 20% of your mind is on the breath, and 30%, and 40%, and gradually the amount of your attention on the breath becomes bigger and bigger, and less of your attention is somewhere else. So it's a gradual process. But first you have to establish that one part of your mind stays on the breath and doesn't lose it. Okay? So that's the trick, you know. You don't worry, you don't get upset, you don't worry about the wandering mind. You're not looking at that. It's there. If you would pay attention to it, you could follow thoughts. But they are there, but you don't pay attention to them. You know, you pay attention to that little part of your mind that stays on the breath. Right? And that's what you're interested in. And if you do that, then gradually, because you don't pay attention to the thought, they will become more and more subtle, you know. They will fade in the background and your attention will really be on the breath. All like that. So, one more. So again, you check your position, you move your body a bit, and you imagine that you really rooted into the ground. You know, you have roots going down your legs, your feet or your spine to the ground, and your head goes up into space, and that your posture, you know, is relaxed, comfortable, that you can remain without moving for 5 minutes. Then you decide, now for 5 minutes, I'm not going to lose, I will maintain a sustained attention on the movement of the breath. I will not let it go. And while I hold the breath, I will hold it neither too tight nor too loose. So for those which think that 5 minutes is too short, you see, you have to increase the quality. So for those which can rest 5 minutes on the object without losing it, so you try to increase the quality of your holding the object. You see, the mind is a little bit like, our attention is a little bit like a pendulum. You know, at this side, you lose the object. You know, at this side, you lose it because you don't have enough attention, dullness. Gross dullness arise, you lose the object. Here, gross distraction, gross excitement arise, you lose the object. But between these two, you can have the mind that stays on the object continuously in the middle here, without ever losing it. So here there's subtle distraction, subtle sinking, subtle excitement, subtle sinking. And here is calm abiding. You know, so at the beginning, the mind goes, I lose it here, I lose it there. But then the mind doesn't lose it anymore, but still moves. You see? So there, you have to get another level of sustained attention. You have to look more precisely. You see, you have to, the acuteness of your looking becomes more intense, you know? And then gradually you're able to remove that, and then the mind stays completely still. And when the mind enters that stillness, it's almost like you enter into a zone. You know? You know, there's no more slight movement. It's a little bit like, you know, you go to the hospital, and you look at somebody's wired up, and there's the electroencephalogram, you know, tweak, tweak, tweak the heart, you know, and when the person dies, bzzz, you know, the line, you know, that, yeah. So Shina is like that, you know, tweak, 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 and then suddenly, bzzz, you know, the mind is completely still and sharp, you know, and you enter the zone, you know, and in that zone, somehow there's a, you start experiencing the pleasure of the mind, you know, a bliss, a stillness, you know, and a clarity. Wow. You know, you say, wow. You know, mentally you say, wow. That's what they talk about. You know? So you try to find this quality, you know. And then once you have that quality, then, and you can able to sustain it, then you increase the quantity. But so look for this quality, you know. Also, at the beginning, for people which cannot even get, you know, to the mind to rest on the object, so sometimes it's advised that you count the breath, you know, 1, 2, 3, because then you make noise, you know, with your thought, so you cannot have two thoughts at the same time, right? So you make a thought that keeps you on the breath. So another way, instead of counting the breath, is you comment what you're doing, no? You know, while I breathe in, I'm aware that I breathe in. While I breathe out, I'm aware that I breathe out. As I breathe in, I'm aware that I breathe in. As I breathe out, I'm aware as I breathe out. And like that, it kind of, you know, maintains or reminds you that what you're supposed to do. Right? So it chases away the other thoughts, right? So that's a technique that one can use at the beginning. And then once it has fulfilled its purpose of you to stay on the breath, then you let it go. No. Okay, another one. So again, you move your body in, you put yourself into a good position, you check that there's no tension anywhere. You put yourself in a comfortable position, and then now you say, and you try not to move anymore, and you say, now for 5 minutes, I'm going to train this sustained attention. Because I remember all this benefit that result from that training, so it's something I wish to develop,
Now for 5 minutes, I'm going to focus exactly on this and that. You find the spot or the place where you want to focus. And you hold it neither too tightly nor too loose. So a trick that helps is that actually you like your object of meditation. You know, you love it. So, oh, I like my breath. I like the feeling of focusing on the breath. Then you hold it neither too tight nor too loose. You see, one way of looking at it is like, you know, in, for example, in California, where I used to live, there's a lot of windy road, and on Highway 9, and in a certain season, you have fog, you know, so actually you don't see anything, you know. You're driving the fog. So when you have a car in front, you have the tail light. So actually you follow the tail light of the car in front of you and you don't let it go, because if you let go, you're out, you know. So you follow the tail light. So you have this sustained attention on the tail light in front, you know. So it's a little bit similar, you know. You hold your object of attention and you're not letting it go. Even though the mind might move, things might happen, you don't let it go. Or sometimes another thing that is like a video game. You know, you lose point. You know, if you let go, you know, it's like, oh no, I have not to lose it. You know, kind of like that. You know, kind of like that. So it's kind of almost like a challenge. You know, you take it as a game. You know, oh, I have not to lose. You know, so the more you put challenge in it, you know, actually the more. You know, it's kind of an interesting thing, you know. Karma abiding is kind of an interesting way of looking at the mind. You know, it's another way of looking at the mind. And it's just a question, we are not familiarized with it, you know. It's not actually that difficult. It's just a matter of learning to look at the mind in a certain way, or looking at the breath in a certain way. So now, the next object I want to introduce here. So one can use the breath and continue on the breath. Or you can use as the object now, you know, you focus on the breath, and then after a while you look at the mind that looks at the breath. You see the awareness of the breath. What is that? You focus on the awareness itself. Right? So the awareness is focused on the breath. But instead of looking at the breath as an object, then you focus on the awareness itself. Okay? Try to see whether you manage to find this awareness. So again, sit comfortably. See, there is no tension. Then you can start by saying, no, for 5 minutes now I'm going to observe awareness itself. And you hold it neither too tight nor too loose. So awareness is something like space, formless, yet it cognizes, it is aware. And you hold that space. Again, there might be things in it, like thought, mental image. But that's not what you focus on. You focus on the space itself, not on the content, the quality of spaciousness and awareness.
All right, so maybe three questions concerning Kalma Bhadi. If someone has questions, yeah.
If I could be allowed two questions, I can get it over with.
Okay. Naughty.
Joking. One of the questions was that what happens, or how do you deal with, you have this sustained attention on the breath. It takes effort to do that. The mind gets tired, at least my mind gets tired, and then I just sort of like lose it. Mm-hmm. It's like letting the air out of the balloon, and the balloon just goes all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like I'm just like I don't know where I am. You mm-hmm. know, it's like mm-hmm. so I don't know how to keep my mind from getting tired. The other question that if I could just go and get that one over with is that with the one that we just did, focusing on the awareness. I don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
I can focus on the breath. You can feel the sensation,
mm-hmm.
coolness and the warmth as you breathe in and out.
Mm-hmm.
That one I can get.
Mm-hmm.
But the awareness, it has nothing. I don't even know exactly yes. where even to begin with that one.
Yes, yes, yes. So for the first question, you see, it's true, at the beginning it needs a lot of effort. Right, to get sustained attention. At the beginning, it's very tiring, you know. So, that's why, so you see, if 5 minutes is too long, you know, you might be able maybe to stay 10 seconds or 20 seconds. So basically, you break it up, you know. You hold it as long as you can, and then it blows, and then you relax a bit, and then again, you know, you put your attention on it. And it blows, you let it go. And gradually you will be able to extend that duration of sustained attention with less and less effort. Right? So simply you start from where you are and you break it up, you know, more. You know, kind of like that. And if with the second question about finding awareness, that's the big trick about that. So for some people, it's not an object they can yet focus on because they don't find it. Right, so that's one of the difficulty of using the nature of the mind to develop calm abiding, because it's difficult to find the object to start with. Right, so basically, it wouldn't be an object that you can focus on now because of that. Even though this afternoon I will show another way to find the mind. So there's many different tricks that can use to actually get a feel of what one focuses on. You know, I haven't spoken really much in detail at this point. Okay.
Hi. I was wondering. My mind tends to want to see a visual image.
Yes.
So if I'm trying to focus on the breath, I want to see something, and mm-hmm. I'm wondering if I'm creating just another distraction or another object, or if there's something that I could visualize.
Yeah.
When I'm observing
yeah.
the breath,
yes.
that would be
yeah.
acceptable.
Yeah. So if, you know, if the breath is not a sympathetic object for you, you know, so to say, you know, so one can use another object, like a mental image. So you can focus on a mental image, you know, like Tara or Chenrezig or Shakyamuni Buddha or even a lotus or whatever, basically. But you have to decide on an object, and in each session you take the same you cannot change objects, right? You have to familiarize yourself with one object and always keep the same. So you have to find an object that you like. But usually you take an object that doesn't increase your attachment, so you wouldn't take your partner or your child or your pet, because you know, the attachment would grow the more you meditate. And you wouldn't take somebody you don't like, because the anger would, so you take an object that is pleasant, that you like, but is peaceful for your mind, you know. So usually one takes an object that has spiritual qualities, so that the more you focus on, the more these qualities are awakening you. That's why usually one takes the image of the Buddha in our tradition, you know, as an object. But it could be basically, in terms of karma abiding, it could be just about anything. But in terms of effect that it has on the mind, it's better to take an inspiring object. Right? So this afternoon I will explain, you know, as a, you know, how one would do about with a Buddha's image, for example. Okay? Welcome.
So you were saying that we could choose between the objects. Should we choose the object that's easiest? Or should we choose maybe one that's not as easy so that we grow more? For example, for me, the awareness meditation is the easiest.
Mm-hmm.
The image is the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a long time, I've been thinking, well, I really should be doing meditations on images because I need to improve in that area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But is there any, you know, truth to that, or should we just pick, you know, what works for us?
It's a good question. You know, all the students come up with that question. It really depends. You see, how to say, the training in calm abiding is just one aspect of what you need to develop in the picture of the whole path to enlightenment. Right? So it depends on other qualities you wish to work on. You see, so in terms of calm abiding, usually it's good to find an object that one likes and that is actually quite easy, so you make quicker progress, you know. So the nature of the mind has the advantage, if one focuses on, is close to emptiness, space, right? So it's easier to understand the nature of the mind, you know. So all the time you work on the nature of the mind as an object, somehow it's then easy to understand its ultimate nature, you know. And then also, once you focus on the nature of the mind, you know, as once you're quite advanced, it's easy to crystallize anything in it. You can create any shape, anything in it, and you can hold it, you know. Once the mind is clear, it can reflect, it's like a mirror. A mirror doesn't care what it reflects, right? So once the mind is clear, you can visualize anything in it and it stays. Once you have mental stability on the space-like nature of the mind, you know, then visualization becomes easy. You know? Yeah. For the time being, maybe tomorrow, you know, we'll elaborate that, you know, as more information comes. Okay, maybe one, two more.
When I first started to learn to meditate, I was meditating in Los Angeles. So I was in this little, you know, dumpy suburb part, you know, listening to gunshots outside the meditation hall. And so it was taught to me kind of a little differently. I mean, I guess you used the word crystallize in front, you know, the...
Please, just question about calm abiding now, okay? No.
Can you go into the... Like when you're doing the calm abiding, how do you stay focused when there's so much of that, of so much havoc all around you? That's what I want to know. Like so much commotion, so much stuff going on all around you. My mind tends to wander too much.
Yeah, it's just training. Just training.
And some days are better than others.
Yes, definitely.
Some days are better than others.
Ah, yes, definitely. Yes. Oh, definitely in general life, you know, life goes on, right? But it's just a matter of training. And of course, calm abiding and any spiritual training comes in the context of one's ordinary life, you know. And so one part of the training is to simplify one's life as much as possible, you know, make it more peaceful, more in harmony with one's spiritual aspiration. If one's life is too chaotic, it becomes difficult to meditate, for sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, I seem to do well with the breathing, but I have this verbal stuff going on, but it's about the breath.
Yes.
As a beginner, as...
That's good enough.
Okay.
Don't worry about that. Just focus on that part of the mind that stays on the object. The rest will disappear on its own accord over time. Don't worry about it. If you worry about it, it becomes worse, you know?
Yeah.
So just let it be.
Thank you.
Yeah.
When we're breaking up into different sessions, it seems to be harder and harder to come to the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
Like you do the first session and then you start, that pendulum starts calming down. Then you get tired, you let go, and then when you come back to the next session, it seems even harder. It mm-hmm. doesn't bring back to the same spot where you mm-hmm. left it. So when would you just stop completely, or should you just keep making an effort to let that pendulum go? Is that making sense?
Maybe. So you see, we are in a group situation. So, you know, one has to create a certain discipline that everybody follows. Because if everybody makes their own session here, somebody stand up, take a break, you know, it doesn't work, right? So we have but if one does alone, then one regulates the length of the one session, the way it works for oneself, and one regulates the length of the break as it suits oneself. You know, there's no rule, basically, you know. So when one does very short session, you know, like 5 up to 10 minutes, you know, basically you don't go to drink a coffee each time in the break, you know, because, you know, you don't really need, right? But so basically it's just a matter of relaxing the attention, relaxing a little bit the body and going back to it. Right, and then when your mind is tired and you cannot actually go back to it, then it's time to take a longer break. You know, you go for a little walk. You know, you do something else. You know, and then once your body mind is relaxed, you come back to it. Right. So here we do many 5 sessions at a row. So for some people it might work, and for some people it might already be too much. They would need a longer break to be able to get back to the sustained attention. Right. So here, basically, you know, if we had 2 weeks, you would see, you know, things would really progress, you know. But in 2 days, it's actually difficult to see much more. So it's more like my aim is more to teach you how to look at the mind, to learn the tools, you know, with different things. And then maybe some of you might decide to continue, you know. And for the other one, it's just, you know, learn, you know, understanding what other people do, you know, in the training on calm abiding. Yeah.
When you say focus on the breath, is it okay? Is it calm abiding to be imagining white light coming in and positive thoughts and compassion and kindness and then breathing out and seeing yellow, or should I try and get rid of those colors and just focus on the breath?
At the beginning, it might be helpful, you know, in the same thing as I breathing, I'm aware that I'm breathing, I breathe out, as I'm aware to breathe out, right? So it's kind of a gimmick that helps us to focus, you know, on the breath. So it's okay. But at some point, you know, in deeper calm abiding, you would let go of that, right?
In terms of session duration, how much value is there in, like, keep coming back to the thought? Like, you know, you maybe have gone too long, like, longer than you are. You're pushing longer lengths. Like, I've read, or, you know, podcasts that seem to indicate there's a lot of value in the practice of, okay, I've lost it, the pendulum has swung too far, and then, okay, coming back. Like, there's a lot of value in continuing to come back, even though you might not be able to hold it very long, but the value is in the continuous coming back. Is that maybe not correct or not a right way to think of things?
I'm not sure. You see, the first power of the mind that you want to develop is the power of mindfulness, of the sustained attention. Okay? So it's a strength of mind that doesn't lose it. Okay? So that's the first power you try to develop, that you establish this continuity. And you have established this continuity at level 4. Right? At level 4 you don't lose the object anymore. Okay? At level 3 you have sustained attention, but then you lose it and you have to bring it back. At level 3. At level 3 you have sustained attention, but from time to time you lose it, and what you become smarter is that to bring it back quicker and quicker and quicker, till actually when it's about to go away you're able to prevent it. And that's level 3. Okay? So I think it's very individual. You have to actually experiment. You know, is it better for you to make shorter session and have this sustained attention, or to make longer session and, you know, have maybe less sustained attention but bring it back? So I think it's quite personal. You know, I wouldn't say one is necessarily better than the other. I think it's quite, you know, there's a lot in calm abiding, or like in any meditation, there's a lot of things that are very personal, you know, depending on one's psychic, one's interest. So one has to play with it, try and see what works for oneself, you know. You know, like that. So you see, one learns, like here, you know, one learns the technique, one learns the method, and then within that, each one is free to find out what works for himself. You know, there's no actual definite rules. You know, it's not like written in stone, you know. Okay.
Yesterday you mentioned preparing using something like 9-round breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen 9-round breathing done a lot of different ways, using different hands, switching mm-hmm. hands, clearing mm-hmm. one channel 3 times.
Yes.
Is there a right way or a bad way? Or?
Again, you know, there's no real right way. You know, there's different ways of doing it. Different teacher teaches in different way based on their experience. No, so we'll do it, you know, over the weekend. Okay. Yes. Okay, maybe just the last one.
Oh, you're done?
Oh, yeah, they
asked. Okay.
Okay, no more questions then. No, there's one more.
Okay.
This one.
Thank you. When doing a breathing meditation, I've been told and read that it's best to try to breathe naturally, to
yes.
let your breath move naturally. And there seems to be a pause between breaths. And that's an easy place for me to lose my attention. So I'm wondering, is there a trick to help the attention stay on the breath during that pause? Or is that an indication maybe that the breath isn't the best object? Or is it just something that will go away with practice?
So normally when one does sustained attention on the movement of the breath, the breath becomes slower and slower and slower naturally. You know, without you doing anything, just because you sit there, you watch your attention, so it becomes slower and slower and slower, right? So, if you use the breath as an object, you would focus on the space where the breath was, right? So you follow the breath, you inhale, and then is that gap. So in the gap, you hold your attention where the breath is, you know, that's it. And then you exhale, so you follow it up. So you follow in the gap, you just follow your attention on where it's supposed to be. And actually, for people who choose the breath as an object, at some point, you know, when you reach higher level of calm abiding, actually it's not anymore the breath, it's the mind where the breath was that becomes the object. And in certain traditions, it is like a swirling of light that happens where the breath was. You know, for example, if you focus on the nostril in the breath here, so because the breath becomes so shallow, you actually cannot feel the breath anymore. You just continue to focus on where your attention was before, while there was movement of the breath, and then there's appear to be a swirling of light, you know, and that becomes your object. Because it says, you know, you cannot develop calm abiding on a physical sensation. It has to be a mental object. So even the breath at some advanced level turns into a mental object. Right? Okay. So just to finish, you know, so we do 5 minutes on love and compassion, focus on the movement of the breath. So you sit comfortably. And then you feel yourself, you know, how wonderful it would be if I would have this peace, still mind. See how much, you know, it would be wonderful if my mind would be so still and peaceful. And with it would come bliss and joy. And that mind would be so clear that it would reflect like a crystal ball, whatever question you would have, in that inner clarity you would have intuition. Many intuition that would turn into clear seeing. So how wonderful if I had that. So you give that to yourself. Imagine gaining that inner peace. And then you put yourself in the shoes of your neighbor, the person sitting next to you. And you think, wow, that person, how wonderful it would be if he or she experienced this peace of mind, this inner stillness, this inner clarity. And as you exhale, you imagine that you offer that to that person. That light energy from your heart goes out your nostril and enters into his and her heart and gives him or her this inner peace, inner stillness, inner joy, inner light. And then gradually you do that to more and more people in this room. Imagine as you inhale, you offer that inner clarity, inner joy, inner light. You exhale that from your heart and you make it enter into the heart of all the beings in this room. Which all are very dear to your heart. One time in the past, they have been your most intimate friends. So you dearly care for their happiness. Then you expand that to include all living beings. Just imagine all living beings. May they all be happy. May they all find this inner peace, this inner joy, this inner clarity. And as you inhale, you imagine offering that to all living beings. Which all have been very dear to you at some point. And that you truly care for their happiness. Thank you very much. Now we do. We have an hour lunch break. Okay. So we imagine the food over there somewhere, right? In cyberspace. So how you do it? Maybe you do it or you have an...
Just a very quick chance in Tibetan and
says, "Bon appetit." Okay, so I'll do it the Tibetan way, or the way we used to. So those which know can join in, that one not. So normally with Om Ahom, we invoke all the blessings of the body, speech and mind of all the Buddhas, which absorb into the food and transforms into nectar. And then this nectar we offer to all the enlightened beings, all our teacher, you know, and all living beings. Om Ahom, Om Ahom, Om Ahom, Lama Sangye Lama Che De Chin Lama Ge Den De Kuan Gi Bon appétit. This one I know.